It's been a few hours since I've seen you, Jay. 4 hours? Yeah, we had quite a night. Morning. I'm going to feel like I'm backwards to you. Guy in our church is getting married August 5th, and we had a gathering of men to gather last night, and we went on the river to start. We went skiing, and where's Todd at? Todd was here just a moment ago. And we tried to wakeboard. I was going to see if Todd would say he wakeboarded or not. I don't know if he ever got up on the water. A lot of pulling in the water. Yeah, my body feels like not quite 21 exactly. After I'm 22. But anyway, you know, to start, I was just reading my text. What happened was is we spent some time just on the river having a good time, and then we went to an Iowa Cubs game and saw this Kyle Schwarber. Boy, gotta love baseball. More grown men chasing a ball around. Sports are weird to me sometimes. It's a lost concept. But we saw Kyle Schwarber hit 2 home runs. Yeah, pretty good hitter. Yeah, still won. And then after the game, I had told all the men that they had to share text messages with me for advice for Will, the guy who's getting married. So bear with me a moment. This is a little bit of what I find quite humorous. So I'm not gonna read you the sage ones, the wise ones. I'm actually gonna read you just 2 funny ones because I think they're funny. So I think you might as well. So here's one of advice for a Will that was getting married last night. He said, the guy texted me, he said, "Arguing together is like reading a software license agreement. In the end, you have to just ignore everything and click I agree." It's pretty funny for an all-guys party of, yeah, you just click I agree. I thought that was funny. And here, I thought this was the best one as far as humor is concerned. Let's see if I can get it. It's not that long, but I want to make sure I get it right. Sage advice for Will, who's getting married. Do not say, "That is not how my mom does it." I thought that was pretty good. Okay. Enough of that introduction, and good morning. All right. So, some quick family updates. Our budget for week 26, 237, we're at 182, a little bit behind, and we like to put up here the principles of continue to encourage each other to give with a grateful heart and to continue to give regularly. So that's where we stand right now. Calendar updates. This is a little bit of a change of course since we've been communicating this. So we'll have no Sunday morning teaching times on August 6th and August 13th. Those are the first 2 Sundays in August. And we're only going to be, we're not having any teaching time, network teaching time like this on those 2 Sundays. And we will be having in Union Park down in Des Moines, right next to the river I was just telling you about, we'll have a all-network picnic. Is that how you spell picnic? Ooh, too much water in my head, evidently, from the river. So August 13th, and we'll give you some more details on that as the details come out for that. So that should be a good time. Okay, here's what I'd like to do this morning. I want to dive a little bit deeper into 2 Corinthians 9. 2 Corinthians 9. So we will continue our focus on Paul's early letters. We've been talking a lot about his early letters that he's written, and we're in 2 Corinthians now, but his letters to the Corinthian churches. All of these letters focus on establishing the churches in the gospel, which is should be our intention as well, to be more established in the good news, in the kerygma, in the gospel. And we will focus on 2 Corinthians 9, where Paul is shaping the churches to contribute financially to the progress of the gospel. Paul is, as we saw last week, and as I think you'll see this morning, Paul is asking the Corinthian churches to participate in what he's calling the collection. So we'll look at that. And this is especially timely for us as a network. And this is, when I was deciding this week on what we would spend some time on this morning talking about, these are the three things that came to mind that have been happening that I think it's timely for us. And that is, we are at this stage of, I put it in quotes, stage of life, because I'm thinking about the stewardship that our family has been given, our global work, our national work, our local work. So the stage of life that God has us, that's what I mean by stage of life, of sustaining a global network. We have a global network that God has given us opportunity, and we're in the process of sustaining that. So there's your planting of it, there's the, but now we're kind of in the watering stage, to take on a farmer metaphor. So sustaining the global network, and what that really means is we've had conversations with foundations, with partners, and it has been centered around the building of CBTE hubs across the world. So what I mean by that is church-based theological education hubs. Another way to kind of see that is we're in the process of creating and setting up apostolic teams in different places around the world, so that we don't always have to travel there and go there, but other leaders that have the gifts, the calling, the stewardship, they will do some of the work. So I leave in 2 weeks, I think, for India, and I'll be there for 2.5 weeks, and I'm going to work, not 2.5 weeks. Well, it doesn't matter the timing. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to hopefully come back, is the main point. But I'll be working with two partners in particular. Normally, I'm just in a place for a short period of time, but here I'll be there for three and a half days with a single partner, and I'm only going to be working with two of them. And we're going to be exploring setting up the first steps of a CBTE hub, what that really means for them. And so that's the first thing that's going on that I think this is very timely for us. Second, we're continuing to work with Build partners and city churches who we are asking to support the Build network. Meaning we have Build partners and we have city churches from the States, and we've asked them to support those that the Build network by giving to the Pauline team, which is us. That's the work we've been up to. And I've left some of those conversations. Randy and I have been having those conversations with these national churches. And Randy and I hang up the phone or hit end on the Skype call, and there's been some conflict back and forth a little bit. And we've looked at each other, scratched our heads, and said, what does it mean to actually truly partner? What does it really mean to genuinely partner with other churches and for those churches to partner in the global work? What does that really mean? So that's another question that's come to our mind this week and the week before. And as the third thing is, I think while this is timely for us, is as leaders, we have asked you to excel still more in your giving to the Build team and for the upcoming Build conference. These are important items. So I want to talk more about that, but we as a family have done a lot, but we've asked you to excel still more. So we'll talk about that. All right, let's hand this out. I'm not going to read this to you, I've got it on the sheet for you, 2 Corinthians 9. If I could get some folks to help hand them out. I'll just give them to you. So on your sheet, I gave you 2 Corinthians 9, 1 through 5, and then 10 through 15. And there's four discussion questions on it, so at your tables, in groups. These are the four questions that I'd like you to discuss, and then we'll come back and talk about them. Why don't we take the west side? Why don't y'all do the first two questions? Focus on one or both, but I'll ask this side of the room for feedback on the first two, and I'll ask this side of the room for feedback on the last two. Sound good? All right, we'll circle back in a little bit and discuss. Yeah. So Todd, would you classify yourself as wakeboarding yesterday? No? No? You have to get on top of the water to classify, you think? Okay. All right. I was sitting at my table, and you'll have to understand, I had a chance to, when I make these sheets to, and in the slides, you have a chance to, you can copy and paste. I like to type them out, so that way it's part of my own learning process, as you type out the passage. But yeah, can you tell? Does anyone know about then it really will appear as a grit of grace, or girt? Girt. It's a girt. It's a thing. It's kind of like a belt. Okay. Anyway, forgive me if you are a few of those misspellings there. I think it's mostly there. So, what about the first two questions about what is the shame that will be on this business, is the terms N.T. Wright uses here? And how is the business that is described different than a Western business model? What does it mean to be enriched in every way? How can Paul promise an overflow when at the moment he's asking for funds that hasn't been completed yet? How can he promise an overflow? And then what is sure to overflow? So, comments about your discussion. Could read you more text messages from Sage Wisdom from last night, but doesn't seem to be appropriate. Nobody? Nate?
Well, Paul clearly understood that, you know, he had a work to do, and part of that work included establishing people in their faith, of helping them understand these ideas and helping them see the broader picture and scope of the ministry that they were involved in. And it appears that he was also talking to other people about this, you know, and sharing information about them and the exciting things that were happening and what he was, you know, moving them forward to do. So in one sense, he doesn't want to be embarrassed and show up, and, you know, it would look like he really wasn't doing his job, wasn't carrying out his stewardship, and he doesn't want to, like many of us, wouldn't want to show up embarrassed and be ashamed of the fact that he wasn't getting the work done that God had called him to do in a very real way.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you read in here, it says Achaia and it says Macedonia, and that, so the Achaia churches, that's That's all. That's the churches of Corinth fit in Achaia, and the Macedonia churches fit in their north and east a little bit more, and that's like Ephesus. Is Thessalonica in there? Does anyone know? Asia Minor is Thessalonica. So I know the Ephesian church for certain fits up in the Macedonia one. So Paul's been talking about his work, as Nate said, to the certainly to the Macedonia churches, which would include Ephesus. And then he's bragging and boasting, he says, about the Achaia churches, which is the Corinthian churches he's writing to now. Anything else about anybody talk about the shame on, it'll bring shame on us in this business?
Yeah, sure. We thought it was kind of sound like it was a Italian mob family going after it. I mean, this is, you know, whether you're reading it as a shame on us in this business or some of the other translations that are out there. I mean, he's really putting a lot of pressure on this group, and he's doing it in a way that doesn't really leave them an out. You know, as you look at the full, you know, text that he has in here, he tells them about how he, you know, went and told other churches about the gift they promised. And then those churches gave based on that. And then to come back and say that you're not going to actually come through and follow up on your gift that you've already promised, well, that would suck. So he's really not leaving them out. And Kathy brought up that, you know, you would see in today's, normal Christian culture, there would be some out in this, you know, something to the effect of, well, you know, if you could you come through with that gift, and could you, you know, if maybe it doesn't work out this time, there'll be other opportunities. Uh-huh. That's not what Paul's getting at in this, and he's really putting the pressure on to make sure they come through, because it really is a make or break opportunity that he sees here in his the work of the ministry.
Yeah, that's right. It is strong language here. Pretty strong language. That the word shame is nobody wants that. Good. All right. What about this side of the room? The questions 3 and 4 surrounding this passage. What is the test they're intended to meet? What are the two expected results that Paul talks about? And what does a sincere partnership include? That's the language N.T. Wright uses in the translation. Other translations use different words, but they use the word partnership. What is it? Genuine and sincere partnership. He's talking about a genuine and sincere partnership between the Achaia churches and the Macedonian churches. Aaron?
Well, while you were talking about wisdom on water skiing there, I was looking up the word business. I was kind of coming off the last question, bringing shame on us in this business.
Business, yeah.
And business, you know, from the language is busyness or... I mean, not as we count just busyness as something negative, but what it is you're engaged in. So I was looking at our questions, right, the ones that we addressed at our table, along with the questions of what does it mean to bring shame on us in this business, and thinking one of the things that it would mean is this would demonstrate that you've entered into a genuine and sincere partnership if they follow through with this gift. And that seemed to have a special amplification if part of Paul's business is to generate genuine and sincere partnerships.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dramatically different, we'll give Paul this money, then he'll go off and evangelize somewhere else and we can get on with our life, right? But if Paul's business is to generate genuine and sincere partnerships, which include exchange of money for the balance of need and, you know, for the progress of all, that is his business, which is a really different place than just come through on your gift. You know, don't make me look bad
great.
Here.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, because that picks up what you just said, picks up the whole idea that or questions, I think, Randy, certainly in the last week and a half, you and I have been struggling with our network of national churches and connecting them to international work, our global partners. And so we have the churches of Macedonia in the States. We're trying to connect them to the churches of Achaia, global work. Metaphor doesn't completely work if you think it through, but in general it works. And we've been trying to say, hey, this is our business. This is the work we've been called to do, is connect you so you can have genuine and sincere and full partnership. But we haven't, to be very clear, we haven't, when we've been talking about that, I'm not really sure I've always known what that means. Because one of them in particular asked us, he says, well, at the end of the day, we're just a funding source. We're just giving money, and that's really all it is at the end of the day. Well, no, that's not true at all, actually. That's a piece of it that we're talking to you about, but that's not the fullness of it. That's not the genuine and sincere partnership we're really talking about. We're talking about this being a benefit for you, actually. So, good. Anything else? Randy?
Yeah, we just talked about, related to the partnership idea, a little bit more that, if partnership has the idea of a sharing with, a fellowship with, a sharing in something common, seemed like there was a responsibility both that Paul had to create that and that the Corinthians had to create that or to enter into that. Because Paul's talking to these networks of churches, Achaia, Macedonia, this was before Skype, it was before Airflight, it's likely that none of them would ever actually be able to set foot on the ground in Jerusalem, be tangibly there. But yet, as Paul's reasoning, they could very much have a sense of partnering, nonetheless. And it had to do with the financial, but the financial was just an expression of, I think, things that was already stirring in the hearts of both Paul and in the churches, where they would, out of a sincere faith, would share with Paul the first of all the global vision, beyond their local stuff, a genuine concern for the progress of the gospel.
Paul would share that, or the Corinthians?
Paul was putting that in front of them. He would put in front of the Corinthians what was happening,
right,
in Jerusalem,
yeah. Okay.
What the Macedonian churches, what it should have, and what it seemed like what was needed to be produced in the Corinthians was that shared mindset. Beyond just us, there's concerns on a broader scope that I need to share concern with Paul for that need and for the progress of the gospel here and so forth. And then give consistently with that. And then he speaks at the end of that passage about the reciprocal kind of relationship that would exist between Corinth and Jerusalem. That the prayers would be going both
back
ways.
And forth, yeah.
There'd just be a genuine way that there'd be a reciprocity, if that's the right word, but a reciprocal nature between the Corinthians and the Jerusalem believers as a result of their meeting of that need.
Uh-huh.
And so that was those are perspectives, heart perspectives that Paul's building into the Corinthians as he's reasoning through this.
Yeah, so Paul had a role, you're saying, in sharing these things. The Corinthians had a role in participating with it, but they both had to have the same mindset.
Yep.
Both had to have the same passion about it.
Yep.
Brian is standing back there, but I still remember a month or so ago, I was trying to explain something, and Brian said, "What do you really want?" Wasn't quite like that, but what do you really want? And is the share? I want you to understand these global partners and share in the passion of them, sharing our desire for them, and you may never set foot on the ground in some of those places, but share in what the work they're doing. Okay, good. It is becoming clear, as we move through these early epistles, and I'll talk about what's on the back of these sheets a little bit later here, but it's becoming clear that as Paul encounters problems in churches, as problems come up, he roots the solution to these problems to a broadening understanding of the kerygma, the gospel, the good news, and its implications. Meaning, at the bottom here, in other words, as we are more established in the kerygma, we will understand more of its implications, that is, more areas of our lives and deeper areas of our lives that it affects, and thus we'll be able to solve more of the world's problems. When you look, here's a fundamental thing I'm realizing as we're going through these early epistles. Every problem that Paul has faced so far, what he does is turns back and says, we need to get more established in the kerygma. We need to be more established in the good news. This is as you see in verse 13, this is for their establishment. And so I think about today, I think, man, all of our problems, the fundamental thing that we have to do to address all of our problems is be more established in the good news and all of its implications. Maybe I'm being a bit oversimplistic, but that in essence is what Paul is doing in these letters. And so this is why I wrote those questions. Can the gospel truly solve our world's problems? Is it actually good news? What's so good about it? And I think what I've just explained is part of the answer to that. That's why it's good news, is because it does solve the world's problems. Now, we're not going to go a lot into that, but 2 Corinthians' intention statement, this is, I'm sharing this with you to show the progress of my own work. This is my 2 Corinthians intention statement, and I like to always go back to this, rewrite it if I've got some clarity, but I'm just going to read it out loud for all of our sake here. This is why Paul wrote 2 Corinthians, to give a full understanding and defend his apostolic ministry. He's writing this out of an anguished heart, describing the constant conflicts, explaining his travel plans, while remaining overjoyed about their assigned spheres of work, their fields, is what I want to change that to, I think, fields of work, reminding them of his return, he's going to come back there, and the expectation for the collection. Now, we're really just, in the intention statement here, we're really focused on this last part, but it's embedded in what Paul's doing throughout the whole letter. So the collection, I want to give you a brief, just a real quick background on that. That comes from a couple different spots, but at the end of 1 Corinthians, Paul mentions this to the Corinthian churches. He says, now when it comes to the collection for God's people, you should do the same as I laid down for the churches in Galatia. Oh, where is Galatia? Does anybody know? Caleb, do you know where Galatia is? Is it part of the... No, you don't know. Okay, so this is where it is. I thought I'd pause and see if that was helpful. I hope it was. On the first day of the week, every one of you should set aside and store up whatever surplus you have gained so that when I come, I won't have to take an actual collection. Then when I get to you, I'll write formal letters to send the people you approve, whoever they are, that'll take the collection, to Jerusalem. These people will take your gift to Jerusalem. And if it's appropriate for me, I'm going to go with them as well so we can all travel together. So that's what Paul says at the end of 1 Corinthians about this collection. So the collection refers to financial gifts given to the church in Jerusalem. That's what the collection is. And Paul asked other networks, that is the churches in Galatia and the churches in Corinth and the churches in Macedonia, to participate in this collection. So he's asking across his network, these churches and networks of churches to participate in this. And they were to collect every week so that an actual collection did not have to actually be taken up when they arrive. So I want to read this. Does this have grit in it? No, it says gift there. Typed it once right and once wrong. When it comes to the service you are doing for God's people, you see, I don't need to write you, for I know your eagerness. And indeed, I boasted about it to the Macedonians, saying that the Achaia has been ready since last year. Your enthusiasm has stimulated most of them into action. I've sent the brothers so that our boasting about you in this respect may turn out to be true, so that you may be ready, just as I said you were. Otherwise, imagine what it would be like if people from Macedonia came with me and found you weren't ready. That would bring shame on us in this business, not to say you. So I thought it necessary to exhort the brothers that they should go on to you in advance and get everything about your gracious gift in order ahead of time. You've already promised it, after all. Then it really will appear as a gift of grace, not something that has... Why can't I read that? I always get nervous when I see that word. That has had to be extorted from you. So, this is from what Jeff taught on last week. But Paul's... So if you take those, these are some of the summary statements, principled statements that were that come out of those five verses. Commitments to give in significant collections is contagious and motivates others, and more wealthy churches and church networks need to take the lead. Second, Paul saw part of his business, and not a Western for-profit business, is that's not the term there, but business as in his work, is that his team was to motivate these wealthy networks, or these networks, and that's a little bit... Randy was picking that up in his feedback. So here's verses 10 through 15 then. The one who supplies seed to be sown and bread to eat will supply and increase your seed and multiply the yield of your righteousness. You will be enriched, and this is what he's telling the Corinthians, if they meet the test, this is what's going to happen to the Corinthians if they participate in this collection that he's asked the Macedonians for, the Galatia churches and network for. He says, you will be enriched in every way in all single-hearted goodness, which is working through us to produce thanksgiving to God. The service of this ministry will not only supply what God's people so badly need, but it will also overflow with many thanksgivings to God. Through meeting the test of this service, you will glorify God in two ways. Two ways you're going to glorify God if you meet this test. First, because of your confession of faith in the Messiah's gospel has brought you into proper order, which is an interesting way to... What does that mean? Talk about that. And second, because you have entered into genuine and sincere partnership with them and then with everyone. What's more, they will then pray for you and long for you because of the surpassing grace God has given to you. Thanks be to God for his gift, the gift we can never fully describe. So what's going on here? Through meeting the test of supplying the financial needs of the saints and leaders, two things will occur. You will have proper order. So if you looked, if you just look at that phrase and look that up, it carries the idea of obedience and submission. So you'll have obedience and submission, but to what? You'll have obedience and submission to the confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah's gospel. This is the Messiah's gospel. So if you meet the test, what Paul's saying is you'll be in proper order, you'll be in a proper alignment that Jesus is the Christ. That's what he's saying. So it's part of the... If you meet the test, you're in line with the gospel, with the Messiah's gospel. You'll be in obedience to it. So by giving this collection, Paul's saying they'll have proper order in line with the gospel. And second, through meeting the test of the financial needs, saints, there's two things will occur. Second thing is genuine and sincere partnership. Now, if you read other translations on this, it doesn't. I didn't find any other translation that used that word partnership. NRSV doesn't, ESV doesn't, NIV doesn't, NLT doesn't. I couldn't find any other translation that used that term. But here's what genuine carries the idea of sincere, very generous, liberality, and it's that Greek word, I don't know how to say it. I listened to it. You can hit the little sound thing by it and listen to it like 10 times. It doesn't do any good for me. Haplos, which... but what that carries is the idea of simple, open, no other motives, no alternative motives, very, very just open, simple motives. Give to the collection. I'm going to be in obedience and submission to the collection of what Paul and the team is telling us. And partnership is that word sharing, contribution, and it's that word actually of koinonia, which I found to be a bit surprising, I guess. But it makes koinonia, companion, fellowship, participation, and partner is the range of meanings for koinonia. So by having a pure motive of giving to the collection, true partnership can and will occur. Isn't that interesting? By having a pure motive of giving to the collection, a simple, open, no other motive other than the pure motive of and genuine motive giving to the collection, true partnership, true fellowship, true companionship can actually occur. That's what genuine and sincere partnership really carries. So churches need to understand that when we give in this way, what Paul's saying, to the progress of the gospel, we are enriched in every way. So the actual motivation to major giving by apostolic leadership to the churches is actually for the church's benefit so that they can be enriched in every way. It's actually for their benefit, for your benefit. The true fullest motivation, though, is this. And this is the part we talked a little bit about at our table. And that is the fullest motivation, though, is really coming to grips with the gift we have received from Jesus. The gospel and all its benefits, all its implications, is an indescribable gift, which is all part of becoming fully established in the gospel through the giving of our own gifts. So, as we reflect on Christ's indescribable gift and are overjoyed, I think is what the text says there in verse 11 or 12, you're overjoyed out of that, out of a genuine and pure motives around that, you realize the gift that we've been given, out of that gift, we then give to this collection that Paul's talking about. And that's how he ends verse 15. So, as leaders, we've asked for you to excel still more in your giving to the build team. I'm switching to our implications for us as a network here now locally. As leaders, we've asked for you to excel still more in your giving to the build team. This is important work that we all have been called to do. So we've asked for $150,000, and we've received 40-ish some as of a week ago. We asked the leaders then last Monday, and we got commitments for 48 more. And now we're asking the whole network to participate in this giving to the build team. And so we're asking the entire network to give to the build team. When it's all committed, we'll have about 88. Let's excel still more to the 150. So this is what I'd like to put in front of you in your churches to help us excel still more in the days ahead and all the work we have ahead of us. Jeff is in Bangkok now, en route to Hong Kong, and then India, and he's with Babu in an orality cohort, and NUGM, which is Babu Rao's other. And then I'll be with Babu Rao after that. We're keeping Babu Rao hopping. And then I'll be in Chennai, India, working with NLAG Church after that as well. So it's a busy time, a lot of working on the CBTE hubs and working out models of sustainability models for their hub. I'm really excited about that. So this is what we'd like to for you to participate in. So bring this to your churches. If everything comes in that's been committed, we'd be at 88 right now, and we're looking for 150. All right, here's some of the implications as well for our network family. Part of our establishment in the gospel is giving of our finances. As we look across all the early letters, it's becoming clear that as Paul encountered all the different problems in these churches, he always returns the solutions back to being established in the kerygma and all of its implications from the kerygma. I am just finding that to be so almost a bit overwhelming because you just go back to the good news, go back to the kerygma. What's the problem? We got to go back to the kerygma. We got to go back to the good news. What's the problem? We got to get more established, more understanding, more. When I was writing this, I was really coming to a sense that, man, it's hard to describe, but you have this feeling of joy, like, wow, this is we can really make a large impact on the world, on people's lives. An indescribable gift, and that's what this is supposed to produce. Wealthy churches and individuals need to take the lead on giving. Our tendency, and by our, I am reading into, because I've done this, and I've talked to some of you, you've done this, and so I'm grouping us all into this our tendency part, is when it comes to money, especially money, we tend to calculate how much we've given so far in the past and determine that this is quite a lot. I've found myself to do this. You know what I've done? I'll be very transparent. I've said, I've quit my job. I've done this. I've done that. I've done this check, that check, this. And you kind of calculate how much you've given. And you come to this conclusion in your own mind. This is long before I talked to my wife about it, probably. But I'll say, man, that is a lot. Great Scott. Great Scott. That's a bunch of money. Isn't that a Back to the Future reference? Great Scott. Thank you very much. Therefore, this time around, I'm going to give just less because that's going to be good enough because I've already given a lot. This is not what the text is chasing. I found myself doing this, and this is not what Paul is chasing. This does not produce an overjoy, an overflowing of the indescribable gift that Christ has given. This produces a lot of almost guilt, and it's not a joy of giving, rather it's a under reluctance. And and that's not what Christ is after here. Third, part of our business as our work as apostolic leaders, part of my role and our role as apostolic leaders is to motivate individuals, to motivate you individually, to motivate you as churches, and to motivate the networks to give to the Build or Pauline team. Now, Paul was collecting it here for Jerusalem, but the framework and the principles he's chasing is the same and fits. And so our job, and I've heard that said now the last couple weeks as we've been studying this, our job as leaders is to ask you for these things because it's part of your being established in the good news. So that you can become more and more established in the gospel. And this is not a Western business model. And I'd like to do a teaching just on this. Well, what does Paul really mean by business, Aaron? What does he mean by business, and how does that compare to how we think about business, especially in the West? What's the differences there? This is an equipping of your hearts to participate in the global work and kingdom building. For the Corinthians to become true partners in this network, they were being asked to participate fully in this collection. And this is our desire for the City Church of Ames, Des Moines. This is our desire for city churches across the USA. And this is our desire for Build Associates churches. So how can we be more than just a funding source? What does it mean to truly partner? By understanding the implications of supporting a Pauline team, being motivated to participate in the global work, which will further establish you in the gospel and bring an enrichment in every way. Last slide. So from everything that was said, these are the four things. Tried one slide. With all this in our minds and hearts, reflect on what you'll give, reflect on his indescribable gift. Two, follow through on your commitments. That's what Paul's talking about that Todd brought up. There wasn't, Paul had talked to the Macedonia churches about what Achaia had committed. And Paul's then saying, now you got to follow through. And this is what I'm now encouraging and describing for you, is follow through on your commitments. So some of you second-generation benefactors and second-generation leaders, and then all of our leaders who've promised, follow through on your commitments. Those of you that I'm just bringing this to you, as far as the 150, we're bringing this to you. If this is your first time hearing that, then my response to you is give. We'd like everyone from the network to give to the Build team by next week. And then number four, which is also numbered as number one, I see. It makes a lot of sense. Especially if you had your head underwater for a long time. Todd, wakeboarding under. For this year's summit, and this is a developing thought and request, but for this year's summit, going through this teaching really expanded my mind. That's not quite the right word, but for this year's summit, like to pursue churches that have worked with us in the past to contribute towards the conference costs. More intent. We've done this in the past, but with all the other things going on all the time, we haven't made a big intentional effort towards this. And what I'd like to do is have some people from... We need people from our church family to call, to email, to communicate with a list of potential churches and leaders so that other churches can participate in this global work. Does that make any sense? It was really clear here. I'm not so clear it was here, so clear there. I'd like for our church, for some of you that are motivated around these things, are of working with churches. We have so many churches that have used our resources, so many churches that have used the Antioch School, so many churches that have used the leadership series or first principles around the states. Literally hundreds of them. And what I'd like to do when I go through this and see how Paul is connecting the Macedonians and the Achaeans and the Galatians, all the networks of churches together, I'd like for more of us to talk to those other churches around the USA and say, yes, you can participate in what God is doing around the globe. We want to call you to participate. And so what I'm putting the request out to you right now is saying, would some of you like to do that? So bring that to your churches, talk about it, but then talk with myself or one of the leaders, and I'd like to really get more churches that participate with us in the funding that it takes to pull off the Build Summit this winter. All right. Yeah, Brian. Okay. Good. So, Brian, don't need to do it right now. I could go on for 10 more minutes and explain it. Brian's bringing... What's that? How about 5 minutes? Brian's bringing up the point of when you say giving to the Build team, what does that really mean? So that's a good... And very briefly, less than five, I will tell you, it means salaries for the Build team, it means travel for Build team, it means all the cost of some of the meetings that we put on with Babu Rao or NLG, it means cost of materials, all the work that it takes to not just sit in an office over there or in your house, all the costs associated with moving amongst the churches, that's all the costs associated with that. That's funding of the Build team. Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Brian. All right. Let's pray. Lord, we take a deep breath and we think about your indescribable gift. Lord, I do pray that it would indeed produce a joy in us and a confidence in our work that you've set before us. Lord, I thank you, and we thank you for what's occurred so far in this global work. I do pray that we would excel still more, and that it would not be that it would just be a joy to us to participate in what you're doing. Lord, I ask that you would bless our marriages. Bless the core of our families, meaning our individual families, Lord, and bless our family of families, this church. And I pray for our city churches around the USA as they work with their people to become a family, as they build strong marriages, I think about our global partners. We talked a little bit about NLAG and Babu and all the work that's happening there. I think about the work that's happening in Hong Kong. Lord, it's the same ideas, the same principles that you want people to be established in your good news, to be a family, so that all of us find our meaning and purpose through you and through your church family, so that the world would know about your indescribable gifts. So, Lord, to that end, I pray for this collection for the build team that we've been up to, that we've been collecting. I pray that it would stir in our hearts and our minds about what you've done and what you've given to us. Until we see you face to face, we lift all these things in Christ's name. Amen.